And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Born during the despair of the Great Depression, tempered by the fires of the Second World War, on a parallel Earth very much like our own, yet slightly different, they're banded together the greatest forces for freedom ever assembled. Over the many ensuing years, new and younger members would join the veteran champions of the Golden Age, continuing their fight for truth, justice, and the American way. Becoming so much more than just heroes, they became legends. Back to the Bins proudly presents Legends of the Justice Society of America.
Hello and welcome to Back to the Bins. This is our Legends of the Justice Society of America segment. And I am Scott Gardner. I am joined in this episode by my good buddies. I'm just going to go around the screen as I see it. We've got the producer, Paul Spataro.
Hello. I just to say, when you first started this, I thought I heard you go, ahem.
Ahem. I may have. We have David A. Pasquarella.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. Undefeated. Undefeated in Staten Island.
And Dr. Bill Robinson. What's up, buddy? Oh, that's creepy. Don't do that. All right.
Why? I'm not creepy. I'm just made that way.
So for this episode, we are continuing, of course, on our mission to look at the Justice League and Justice Society crossovers in Justice League of America. And we're just on to the very next one in the series. So for this one, Dave's going to take the lead on this.
All right, we're jumping in here with Justice League of America number 29, with a cover date of August of 1964. This had an on-sale date of June 11th, 1964, for a whopping 12 cents. And our story is entitled Crisis on Earth 3! Exclamation point. Written by Gardner Fox, penciled by Mike Sandowski, inked by Bernard Sachs, and edited by Julius Schwartz. In a cover that to me seems somewhat reminiscent of Justice League of America number 21, we see members of the Earth 2 Justice Society looking through a domed viewer to see the travails befalling the Earth 1 Justice League of America. We get a roll call. Earth 1, Justice League of America. The Flash, Wonder Woman, Superman, Batman, and Green Lantern Hal Jordan. Earth 2, the Justice Society of America. Hawkman, Carter Hall, Black Canary, Dr. Fate, Dr. Midnight, and Starman. And then we get Earth 3, Superwoman, Owlman, Ultraman, Johnny Quick, but not the one we know from Earth 2, and Power Ring. Right at the end of the roll call is a spoiler. All three teams are undefeated. Okay, fine. Then, and I quote, when the super beings of Earth 3 brazenly attack the Justice League, to be followed up by an attack on the Justice Society, it marks the beginning of a spectacular interdimensional struggle that shakes the very structure of three worlds. I think now with that spoiler, we can assume this third team is evil, though they don't have goatees, which would have made it perfect. Especially for Superwoman. In Central City, the Flash, Barry Allen, subdues two criminals gunning for a rookie policeman. In Keystone City, the Flash, Jay Garrick, apprehends two criminals who were intent on robbing a bank messenger. And on Earth 3, a Flash-like character, Johnny Quick, races away from an art gallery, having stolen a world-famous sculpture worth millions of credits. The police tried to apprehend him, but had no success. We are introduced to two more villainous characters. Power Ring is an evil Green Lantern-like character who takes his name from his ring. Superwoman, a black-clad evil version of Wonder Woman. For reference, Earth 1 and Earth 2 are similar, with some heroes having the same name while looking different. Earth 3 operates with a history running somewhat in reverse. Columbus, an American, discovered Europe. Colonial England won its independence from the United States. Actor Abraham Lincoln shot President John Wilkes Booth. On Earth 3, all the superpowered beings are villains who have joined together to form the Crime Syndicate of America. In addition to the three previously introduced villains are versions of Batman and Superman, known respectively as Owlman and Ultraman. However, unlike Superman, Ultraman gains a new power every time he's exposed to kryptonite. At the secret sanctuary of evil, the villains are concerned that the lack of a serious challenge is dulling their abilities. Ultraman arrives to reveal he has gained ultravision and discovered another Earth, where crazily enough, the superpowered beings use their powers to fight crime. How nuts is that? Power Ring opens the dimensional barriers so the Syndicate can see the lunacy transpiring on Earth 1. It's decided that the Syndicate will sharpen their skills by going to Earth 1 to challenge the Justice League. Owlman has a failsafe, in case things go wrong. Chapter 2. The Syndicate attacks America, and the League responds. Each hero plans to engage their doppelganger. Despite their plan, Flash engages with Ultraman as he robs a bank in Central City. The villains are switching places. Flash uses kryptonite, but only succeeds in giving Ultraman heat vision. Just as Flash gets the upper hand, Ultraman uses Owlman's plan. He cries out, Voltoom! In Gotham City, Batman finds Johnny Quick. The tide of battle ebbs and flows, but as Batman is about to triumph, Johnny Quick utters, Voltoom! As Superman battles Power Ring, he realizes the ring may be powered by magic, and the weaknesses of the Earth 1 and Earth 2 Green Lanterns, yellow and wood, have no effect. So Superman uses his super breath to create a vacuum. But as Power Ring is about to pass out, he whispers, Voltoom! And something strange begins to happen. Wonder Woman squares off against Superwoman, probably because they didn't want a man fighting a woman. Superwoman turns her lasso into a flying serpent, but Wonder Woman defeats the serpent and Superwoman by binding them with her lasso. Again, Liga's victory is interrupted by Superwoman's use of the word Voltoom. Owlman's robbery is interrupted by Green Lanterns. Owlman uses his brain to foul Green Lantern's constructs, until Green Lantern realizes this and knocks Owlman out with a boxing glove construct. But before the darkness takes him, Owlman shouts, Voltoom! Chapter 3. Voltoom is a recall trigger that brings the Syndicate member and the Liga to Earth 3. Unprepared for the violent interdimensional shift, the Ligas are left dazed. Voltoom was the name of the monk who gave Power Ring his magic-based ring. Power Ring placed a power in each of the villains that once the name was said, the Syndicate member and anyone in physical contact with them would be transported back to Earth 3. Owlman calculated that since the Crime Syndicate had never been defeated on their home Earth, this was the place where they would be able to defeat the league. Whether it is the home field advantage or the days from the transport, the league falls. Not satisfied that each team won on its home Earth, Ultraman finds Earth 2, which would be the ideal neutral territory to battle the league. Once again, the undefeated league finds itself imprisoned in its own headquarters on Earth 1, while the Syndicate is off to defeat the Justice Society and prepare their battleground. Once again, Owlman has a failsafe plan. The Justice Society is aware that they are being watched. They discover the League is imprisoned by a trance. In a panel ripped right from the cover, Dr. Fate temporarily interrupts the spell, and the League warns them of the Earth 3 threat, including the Volthroom Protocol. Forewarned and forearmed, the Justice Society is ready to take on the Crime Syndicate in the next issue. And that's my synopsis, folks.
That was excellent. Thank you.
I got no problems with the cover. A, and it's a scene we see in the book.
Yes. Bonus points.
But cover's kind of cool. The cover is cool, I think.
Who did the art on the cover?
Mike Sikowski and Murphy Anderson. That's why it's so much better than the interior art of the book. I'm going to continue to bitch about this. Murphy Anderson should be inking the interiors in here. So, yeah. Because he smooths out Sikowski's very, very rough art.
Oh, because... Oh, so the same guy did the art on the in the interior? Wow.
But a different anchor, exactly. Ooh. And I don't know a lot about Bernard Sachs, so I wouldn't be able to like pick out his style or anything. So this is just supposition. But I think he's not really adding or changing Sikowski's art. I think he's literally just inking over it. So that's why it's so just bland and bleh on the interior. But you know, that's why it looks so nice on the cover, is because it's, again, it's Murphy Anderson. And Murphy, I mean, was not only was he a hell of an inker, he was a hell of an artist in his own right. And he had a habit of doing this sort of thing. He makes, I've never seen him not make whoever he was inking look better. And even if it was somebody that was already great, like, say, Neil Adams, just made him look that much better. He was just a world-class inker. So, yeah, I really, really lament that he did not do the interior inks on this. It would have really helped this book.
Well, just like people say that Rob Liefeld can't draw feet, this guy can't draw bodies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
because the close-ups of faces and stuff really looked okay, but once you pull out past the waist, you know, once you get like more than the torso,
yeah, I wholeheartedly agree.
They're awkward, or, you know, Ultraman looks like he's wearing a onesie. I mean, granted, it's a unitard, it's just...
What'd you call me?
What?
So, but he does have fantastic shoulder pads.
His shoulder pads drawn... He's like... It's the same width going all the way down.
He looks like he has a sandwich board under his shirt.
Something.
He did chose.
He's like he's trying to steal the outfit from a store with the hanger still stuck in it.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, this. I don't think this interior artwork would be all that much better, even with a better inker. I think the layouts are poor. I think the body anatomy isn't so great. I'm not going to throw too much in on this because I've already had my say on this book several years ago. But I'm very down on everything but the cover. The story and the artwork in this, I think, were a huge letdown. Especially, you know, my biggest thing is these guys, even, you know, in the day and age when they knew they were writing for young children, they should have known that this was something special, these crossovers. And they should have put, you know, they should have been bringing their A game. And I'm really disappointed with what we got here.
I want to touch on what you just said, because a thought occurred to me on the way home for this recording that I wonder if that's why it is subpar in both story, but it's more especially the art, definitely in the art, is that they already knew it was going to sell. You know, they already knew with you know, Justice League was a hot title. It had all the hot new heroes in it together in one team. And then now they're teaming up with the Justice Society once again. I mean, it's a surefire hit just off the cover alone. So I'm thinking they're just not trying all that hard.
That says to me that they don't have any pride in their own work. And I don't like to give that kind of definition to creators, although I'm sure there's, you know, there's the, you know, we've gotten on Vince Coletta so many times that for a paycheck, he would subvert his artistic integrity. So, I mean, I'm sure there's some of that, but I don't know. I don't know that they just said, oh, this is going to sell, so I'm going to just mail it in. I think they just didn't get ramped up for it, and I don't understand why not.
I don't necessarily mean that so much as I mean, you know, that's why DC's not putting the A-team in the book. You know what I mean? They're putting this guy. I mean, and I'm sorry, I'm sure Mike Sekowski has his fans. I have no idea, you know, about the man personally or anything, so I'm not trying to besmirch him in any way. I'm just saying his art ain't good.
Sucks.
You know, yeah, the art sucks. It does. And it, you know, I'm sorry, there's no beating around the bush. This is shit art. And you know, this is the freaking Justice League. This should have an A team on it, in my opinion. But I suspect the reason it doesn't is because it's a surefire hit, so why bother? Put the A team on something else.
I hear Michael Keaton, if you've ever seen the movie Night Shift, there's one point where he feigns getting all upset about something, and he tries to put it to the Girl Scouts. And he says, the Girl Scouts of America? Of America? And I just keep hearing in my head, the Justice League of America? in Michael Keaton's voice.
Well, was this really selling that much that you think that they were like fine with just putting maybe not their best artists on it?
This was selling enough that Julie Schwartz, somebody correct me if I've got the story wrong, but somebody was bragging about it in a golf match to What's-His-Face, and What's-His-Face turned around and ordered Stan Lee to create a superhero team that created the entire Marvel Universe. So it was selling that well.
I don't think it was Julia Schwartz, but there was somebody. That is the story that Stan Lee says.
Yeah.
Whether or not it's real or not, who knows?
Yeah, there's that too. Yeah.
Well, as to the artist, and I think I've made this joke before, I mean, what do you expect from a guy with one eye?
Mike Wazowski!
Does anybody own this issue?
No.
Nope.
Does anybody want to?
I do own this one. I paid $21.30 for it.
Wow.
Which for this particular issue is pretty damn cheap. So yeah
that must you must have got that quite a while ago.
I did. I happened by absolutely no planning of my own, I happened to start on this project of deciding I want to own every single one of these JLA JSA crossovers at exactly the right time, and I completed the project just before they started to explode. So yeah, I got really lucky. I did not pay a lot for, you know, and plus I already had the bulk of them anyway, but it was these earliest ones that I lacked. I got really lucky.
I don't want to torpedo your theory, but I'm going to torpedo your theory. Because if you run through the next bunch of issues, it's the same writer, penciler, inker team on all the Justice League.
Right.
So I don't think it was, oh, we think this book's going to sell, let's, you know, put a crappy guy on it.
I hate to back Scott up on this, but I think the theory is Justice League in general was selling like hotcakes and they could put shit artists on it.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yes, Paul's right. That's what I was going for.
My mistake.
They knew that the book was going to sell regardless of what they wrote, what they drew. You know, you had everybody was in it. You know, you had all the big guys. You had Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Flash. So they knew it was a surefire hit, you know. So it's like, why try harder?
We're number one. Why try harder?
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't know for sure that this was the number one book, but it definitely was one of their top tier books. And again, if somebody in the listening audience knows differently than that, you know, please feel free to correct me. But that's always been my impression, was that this was for them what would have been an equivalent book at Marvel at the FF, I guess?
I would think so.
Or the Avengers?
But it was different because at Marvel they were just developing their line. So even in the beginning, they couldn't just rest on their laurels and say, oh, we're FF is selling really well. We don't have to put a good team on it, because at that point they were just coming out, you know, to challenge DC.
DC didn't have
the established stars.
Right. They didn't have that luxury, but DC did, because by this point, you know, they'd been around, you know, Superman had been around for almost 30 years. And was, you know, there was already licensing and action figures and, all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I just that's my theory. I have nothing to back it up other than, to me, it makes sense. So, I mean,
this team sucked.
And they seemed to stay on the job for a long time.
Yeah, Sikowski was on it which is exactly why, you know, when Mike and I started with Tales and we're trying to decide on a starting point, that's why we skipped all these. Now, in fairness, I'd read precious few of them. I was judging the book strictly by the cover and by the interior art on like a quick flip through. And they're all kind of like this, unfortunately. Hopefully the stories won't all be like this as well. Although I'm a little more forgiving of the story that on this second time around than I think I was the first time. But I'm with Paul in the thing that this, okay, so we were very forgiving. I remember in an earlier episode, we were looking at the, Flash of Two Worlds, and Paul was saying about how, you know, he kind of wished it was a little bit bigger story, but it was nice that it was just kind of a small story. It was an accidental meeting and that sort of thing. Okay, by this point, we're past that. Now you're revealing a whole third Earth that's populated by an evil version of the Justice League. Mm-hmm. This should be big. This should be epic in scope. This should be, and basically it comes down to, it's another cornball adventure where these guys aren't, you know, they're just looking for a challenge. And like,
you know what was a better story sort of like this? The Super Friends.
Yeah.
With the evil Earth.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I maintain that, right at the beginning of the story, if these guys are already almost fell victim to a net, a cannonball, and a bulldozer, I posit that they're not so in need of a super challenge as they seem to think that they are.
They've just gotten a little rusty.
Well, at this point, why are they still like criminal? You know what I mean? Why are they not just running the show?
You mean like the other evil super friends in the...
No, I think more right. Like when General Zod took over in Superman 2, sitting in the White House.
What was Lex Luthor's comment? Something like, I have vision and the world needs glasses or something like that. He commented I think, Superman 2. Something like that. I'm paraphrasing it awful. But that's the problem with this group. They think small. They're not thinking about taking over the world. They just, hey, look at me. I can beat people up. You know, they're bullies. They're not Dr. Doom who think they can do it better. They're just bullies. So I'm kind of okay with that aspect of it. I just think the motivation they have is fine to me, but the story is stupid with the Zathoom and all of that just dopiness. Come up with
it. It would have been better if it was Shazam.
It would have been better.
But like the way Goma says it, Shazam.
Well, they just could have said Shazam backwards or something. Mazesh. Ultraman. Mazesh. So, Ultraman. Now, I remember, I don't think I've read these early appearances of Ultraman. The way I remember him is that he needed kryptonite to kind of stay charged.
Yes.
Not that he gained a power every time he was exposed to it. And in it at this time, does he... He keeps the powers that he's exposed, or I mean, like, why wouldn't he just keep exposing himself and gaining power after power? Or does the power fade?
Like Red Kryptonite with Superman.
That's the thing. I don't want to spoil ahead too
much.
Okay.
All right.
But
I'll just wait
we get this adventure, you know, this issue we just looked at, and then the conclusion next issue, and then these guys go away for 20 years, something like that.
Wow. They showed up in the 70s in the Secret Society of Supervillains. So about 10 years later.
So they were the ones that actually spurred me to do this because I was looking at something, I can't remember what, and I was like, you know, I always loved the Crime Syndicate. I want to look up their stories. So I looked up the Crime Syndicate on Mike's Amazing World and was absolutely shocked to discover that with the exception of these two issues, you know, JLA 29 and 30, I had every one of their appearances because they only appeared a handful of times before what happens to them in the crisis. I was stunned by that. I'm like, you have got the perfect foils for the Justice League. Why the hell did you use them once and basically never again, at least not really in this? I mean, they come back for that big crossover, you know, the three-way crossover between the Justice League, the All-Star Squadron, and help me out, Dave, what was the other one? The one with Per Degas on it was the Justice League, the All-Star Squadron, and
it's not Infinity Inc., is it? No.
No.
I know the one you mean. It's the
but you know the one I mean. Crisis. Yeah. And so you really only have a handful of stories with these guys. They spent most of their existence in limbo, you know. So it's just so odd to me because they're great characters.
Limbo lower now. I was doing the limbo rock.
Oh right. I had a few notes here. This is their first appearance. This is the first appearance of the Crime Syndicate. All the members that we see, just for observation's sake, the JSA from the prior team up in 21 and 22, the JSA loses Hourman, the Flash, Green Lantern, and the Atom in this particular team up, but they gain Dr. Midnight, who we last saw in Flash number 137, which we did cover. And then this is the one that really befuddles me in this. They gain Starman. He was last seen in Adventure Comics number 102 in 1946.
Wow.
So he hasn't been seen. I made a note of this here somewhere. I did the math and everything. Yeah. For 18 years, over 18 years, he appears here with absolutely no fanfare whatsoever. There's not an editor's note. There's not somebody going, gee, Starman, it sure is nice to see you out of mothballs after. And there's nothing. So if you were a kid who hadn't grown up with him or hadn't experienced him back then or whatever, you're just a kid reading comics, this guy just pops in out of nowhere.
Wow, I mean, who's Starman?
Yeah, nothing. They give you absolutely nothing. And he makes a reference to his cosmic
rod.
Does he call it the cosmic rod in this? I forget. He does make a reference to his weapon, but that's it. That's all you get. And I was like, wow, that's...
Well, that's okay. Dr. Midnight didn't see any of them.
Yeah, for that matter, I mean, they don't really make any fanfare about him either. So if you hadn't, been keeping up with, you know, what's going on over in the Flash and everything, then you wouldn't really know who the hell he is. I don't know. It was really bizarre to me, you know, that they swapped characters out, but especially one from so far back without giving the reader anything. I mean, we know who he is, but a kid at the time, you'd have no idea who this guy was, you know? Wow. So they didn't throw the kids a bone at all.
Now, do you know offhand anyone? Is this one of the first times in, you know, literature that we get evil doppelgangers of characters?
I'm sure it's not. I couldn't give you a specific example, but I can't imagine that we got to whatever it is, 1964, before people realized, hey, we can come up with an opposite number. Sherlock Holmes had Moriarty. He was kind of his opposite number.
Well, but it wasn't an evil Sherlock Holmes.
He kind of was. Yeah.
He wasn't a physical doppelganger. He was a mental equal to Sherlock Holmes.
Right.
Now I understand your question.
He's talking like Spock, evil Spock, like bearded Spock. Is that what you mean?
Right.
Like,
mirror.
Yeah. That's a great question. I mean, I don't know of one, but that doesn't mean there's not. But yeah, that's a great question because this definitely predates the mirror episode of Star Trek.
I'm thinking there has to be something in mythology.
I'm thinking there has to be like an issue of Superman where Mixelplick created an evil version of Superman. Well, you got Bizarro.
Well, yeah.
Mr. Mixelplick?
No! Repeat after me, bright boy. It's Mix. Yes. Spick. Lick.
I think this predates. Well, I don't know. I'd have to look that up because that was in the 60s, but I'm not sure what issue it is.
Bizarro was in the 60s.
Yeah, Bizarro was actually first appeared in Superboy. He was a one shot thing. I think he was destroyed at the end of the issue. Yeah,
he's destroyed.
Yeah,
but I don't know.
I thought he was introduced in the 50s.
First
appearance, Superboy number 68, October 1958.
Okay. So there you go.
So that's the best I could do off the top of my head, but I'm still thinking there's probably other examples.
Yeah, there's probably something we're not thinking of, but yeah, that is a great question. I don't know about you guys. This story would improve 1,000% for me if they excised most of page 4, because that's where this drags down for me and becomes really just it becomes kiddie fodder. With the whole thing of Columbus discovering Europe and actor Abraham Lincoln it's just dumb. I mean,
I kind of like having I like alternate history things. So to me, I'm fine with that.
I'm with you on the alternate. I like alternate history too. And these worlds would have to have alternate history to differentiate them and explain why they're not just duplicates of each other, but they're duplicates that are a little bit off. I'm with you on that, but how radically different would they be if Abraham Lincoln was an act? Just that alone radically changes history. And there, I mean, What were the three examples? It was Columbus. Oh, and England winning their independence from the U.S.
Yeah, they're just trying to use basic things to make people, you know, to make it seem so weird and so opposite of our world. Right. And, you know,
and they're also trying to use things so simple that, you know, an 8-year-old or 9-year-old who's reading this would actually know that history.
Right. Exactly. I think. You're much better in the.
I mean, I'm sure on this world, Adolf Hitler was a successful painter. and ate meat.
That right there, you know, something like that is. I think that's all the explanation that you need is.
And Gandhi was
the Nazis won World War II. There you go. Then that's why.
That's another book.
Gandhi was in.
Yeah, that's Earth X.
Gandhi was in Indian Warlord.
He's back, and this time, he's mad. Gandhi 2. No more Mr. Passive Resistance. He's out to kick some butt.
Yeah, that's a good scenario.
Yeah.
I want to know what the Civil War was all about.
Ask Nikki Haley.
Well, somebody had I did look, in case anybody's wondering that used to be an old Tales listener, I am actually looking these up in the All-Star Companions for the notes. So far, there have not been any detailed notes like Roy Thomas does for All-Star Squadron, just in case anybody's wondering. But there was one thing for this I thought was kind of interesting is that somebody had speculated that somebody did actually have the American Civil War on their brain when they created these guys, because their abbreviation is CSA, the same thing as the Confederate States of America. Mm. So that's kind of interesting. I mean, is it just coincidence or was that intentional? They didn't draw any conclusions. I was thinking about this. Do you think that there's been some sort of cosmic alignment or weakening of dimensional barriers or something that suddenly facilitated all these people's discovery of parallel Earths essentially at the same time? You know, what was the catalyst other than the Flash's Indian rope trick accident? Because right after that, the supervillains discovered the parallel Earths. Now we've got Ultraman suddenly gains ultra vision and he discovers, you know, the parallel. It's all happening right about the same time.
Well, I mean, once somebody came up with the initial idea, then they're like, oh, yeah, we could. Then there's other expansions for other, you know, the whole multiverse is, you know, born out of this. And so it's like, oh, yeah, I can go over here and tell my own story.
But beyond that, I think what you're looking for is like a no price explanation.
In 20 years, in 20 years of atomic bomb testing.
Yeah, well, exactly. Like
I'm thinking the answer is once Flash broke that barrier, the barriers weakened and it became easier for everybody to see it.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm going for, is an in-universe explanation, which, by the way, I don't believe we ever get.
It was the monitor.
Yeah.
It happened with the creation of the multiverse.
What good is Earth 1 money on Earth 3?
When they're using credits, they're not using dollars.
Well, I'm assuming
that's why Power Ring's stealing gold, because gold, you have to, I'm sure gold is still could still be a precious element on his Earth, because he's stealing gold. He's not stealing money.
Well, no, there was a page. Let me pull it up here real quick. The page where the Earth 3 guy, you know, the crime syndicate is on Earth when they're trying to attract attention just before they do start getting attacked by the Justice League. Yeah, it's on page 8 in that little montage scene. You see like Ultraman running away with bags of money, but it shows
fat ass Ultraman
dollar bills. Yeah, he's fat ass, wide ass Ultraman. But it shows like actual dollar bills. Now, mm-hmm. I'm presuming if Abraham Lincoln was never president on Earth 3, that their history's all screwed up. So if they show up on Earth 3 with the Earth 1 $5 bill, they're not going to be able to use it. So,
well, they're not really. None of them are carrying money. And now you're going to say, well, what the hell is Ultraman carrying? He's carrying bags. It could be bags of coins, a precious metal.
Right. Right.
As well, Johnny Quick has a bag, and all that money that's flying around, that's because they're just going through trying to get the gold and stuff.
But blow it out of the way. It doesn't matter. Their mission is to attract the attention. This of is the true. Justice
there
League.
You go. Yeah.
Right. How does Green Lantern know that Owlman has a super brain? Because he says,
because I'm not this stupid. I don't get it. Why can't I? Why'd I make the bar so big? I don't understand.
On page 19, he says, there's only one answer. Somehow Owlman with his super brain has been mentally telling me what to form with my power ring. How does he know he has a super brain?
Because otherwise he's going to say, oh, I'm stupid.
He must be affecting my mind because I'm not a dumbass.
And then you've got Green Lantern's thinking to himself, and he says, by setting up a force field around my brain, risk lopping the top of your head off, for one thing. But also, when he says that, putting a force field around his brain, all I can hear is Robert Costanzo in Total Recall saying,
don't fuck with your brain, pal. It ain't worth it.
It's not.
How come the force field didn't help him when he got pulled through the interdimensional?
That is a great question. Yes.
Because it stunned his body, not his brain.
Dave, why are you asking questions?
I was annoyed from page 2 when they described the two teams as undefeated, when I distinctly remember the Justice League being locked up in their own headquarters again and needing the Justice Society to show up and help them out.
But see, they were defeated on the other Earth and then dropped. I thought that too. I was like, well, wait a minute. Now they're back on their Earth. They should be able to break themselves free. but whatever.
No, I called bullshit on that too, because you got to remember, they're not just talking about the JSA, JLA team ups. I'm taking it they're counting like everything, you know, the whole history of the title so far. And weren't they just straight out of the gate by Despero?
Well, that's what I'm saying. The first crossover with the JSA, they're imprisoned, and the JSA has to come help them out. Mm.
But they were imprisoned by the Earth, by the
Earth 2 villains.
Yeah, that's
well, on Earth 1. So they should have beat them very easily since they're on their home Earth.
Whatever. So page, 12? Looks like Batman and Johnny Quick are doing some swing dancing or something there. although, I make fun of it, but it is a very nice representation of his speed that he just basically, you know, whoosh, swings Batman around and uses him like a doll.
I think the whole introduction of the crime syndicate would have been more interesting if they didn't spoil it up front and let you be like a little bit surprised.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Where you think this is just another JSA type thing. They're the heroes. And then, oh my God.
It would have been nice if they built up a story and then like the final splash page to end the issue had the crime syndicate walking out victorious, and we hadn't even seen them yet.
I'm thinking along those similar lines. I'm thinking something like, you know, if you ever read the Thunderbolts, at the end of Thunderbolts number one, after they've like won the confidence and the adoration of the people, all pull their masks off and everything and reveal themselves to be actually the masters of evil. What if this crossover actually, at least this first chapter, didn't involve the JSA at all, but just the JLA meeting the crime syndicate, but thinking that they're another Justice League from another Earth, you know, just a parallel Earth Justice League.
And then they trick them.
They make friends, and then at the end of the issue, it's revealed, oh, these guys, these are actually bad guys, and we're going to need the help of the JSA to defeat them, or something to that effect.
Yeah,
like a
big reveal at the end.
Yeah, big reveal, yeah.
A cliffhanger.
Yep.
Not like the cliffhanger we got here, which was just stupid.
So Superwoman...
we're stuck.
Superwoman's legs are like a super catapult? Yeesh. Gotta be careful with that.
I really do like these guys, and I like them because we don't get a lot of information about them. They look close to the Justice League, but they're also very different, especially like Superwoman. And I think that's neat because it makes it fun to speculate about like who are they really? Like, is Ultraman Earth 3's Clark Kent? Because we never get that. We never really get any information about these characters at all. And that makes them kind of interesting to me in that way.
He's Kent Clark.
It would be cool if he was adopted by the Kents, and like when they tried to,
the Kents were like Bonnie and Clyde.
No, I'm thinking when the Kents tried to teach him right from wrong, he was like, screw that, and he like lasered them.
He threw them into the sun.
Yeah,
well, isn't that like that movie that?
Oh, please.
I don't even remember the name. I haven't seen it.
No, I know. I know what you're talking about.
Is it Brightburn?
Something like that.
I haven't seen it, but something.
Well, there's the Max. I got it here somewhere. The Squadron Supreme or Supreme they did with the Max imprint for Marvel, where Hyperion, you know, he's, I think he like, I swear that, but unless I'm getting that crossed with the Boys.
Like, I think Hyperion in the Max print.
Doesn't he like
vaporize? I think they had like, but I think they had like a government, government agents government pretending to be his parents.
Yes, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, but doesn't he like fry his pet dog or something?
Yeah, I think he does.
Does a dog like bites that, him or something? Yeah.
But I mean, you understand that in 1964 they couldn't do that.
Right.
So my criticism isn't that they didn't go that far, but. There's so many things in this book that clearly weren't given a lot of thought before they were put into motion. And that's the problem I have with it. Way beyond, I think the artwork in this book is awful, but my problems go much deeper than the art. It's this, you know, I can get by the bad art if the story was good. I could get by the bad story if the art was good. but neither is good in this.
The cover's okay.
It's hard to...
I like the cover. I like the cover. That's it. I would buy this based on the cover, and then I'd be cursing it at 8 years old. I'd be like, these effing people.
Mom! What?
Holy shit!
No.
Fuck.
That's naughty.
Fuck.
That's a bad, bad word.
Fuck.
You shouldn't say that.
Holy shit!
Those are bad, bad, naughty words.
Fuck.
Who taught you those words?
Back to the bins.
If Owlman is so smart, why is his face not covered by a mask?
that's why, because he's using the owl eyes to hypnotize people. They should have done that, you know. Ooh.
I'm just looking at the cover, and the cover kind of plays well with the whole, you could have kept them a mystery till the end.
Yeah, because they're not even seen on there.
Yeah. That's very true.
It's like, why is the Justice Society throwing lightning bolts at the Justice League of America and Earth 3? What's that?
And they could have easily played on it the way they ended the last crossover, because the villains were looking to go to Earth 3. So maybe our heroes would say, hey, you know what, we have to take care of this before they get to it. Let's go over and check out that Earth. And then, you know, the crime syndicate, like Scott said, they're pretending to be good guys. And the next thing you know, the two teams step into a trap. And, you know, that's how we end the first issue.
I like it. I like it a lot better than this.
That didn't take much, though.
There was maybe I'll bring it up. Well, I don't. We'll probably never cover it. Maybe I'll have to bring it as a separate thing. Of course, Scott's going to be like, oh, I hated that. It's a crossover with the Crime Syndicate and the Justice Society. I think you want to say it was done by Morrison?
Yes.
JLA Earth 2. It's been a long time since I read that, but I remember it was kind of like, huh? What?
It's shit. It's pure shit.
And I didn't like the odd either.
Do you remember when they used to do toilet paper comics back in the 70s and 80s? That's how that should have been published. That's the only comic in my life of buying thousands and thousands and thousands of comics. That's the only one in my life I ever bought and took back for a refund. I was like, this is fucking garbage. Give me my money back.
And it was expensive. It was a book.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, yeah. It was a deluxe hardcover. It was like 30, 40 bucks. Yeah. I bought it the day it came out at like Barnes & Noble or something. I'd pre-ordered it and took it home, read it, took it back the next day. I'm like, this is complete shit. Please give me my money back. And they did.
This is crap.
Yep. Now we're going to get letters from people. That's the best book. I've heard people that they think that's like the greatest thing ever written. Yeah, it sucks.
What was the price on this? $15. $14.95.
Oh, that's the trade, right?
I got the trade. It's been a long time since I read it. I don't think I had as much disdain for it as you guys, but maybe I need to go back and give it a reread and bring it to the show.
The biggest problem was that it was promoted as being what I'd always wanted to see with the Crime Syndicate, which is the Justice League meets them and it's a giant tussle. It's them fighting their opposite numbers and they never even freaking meet in the book.
Well, that's right. Shit. Doesn't one go to the other one's Earth and solve all the problems, and then they go back?
Something like that. Yeah, but it's like, I think it's even said in the story that they can't exist together. Like, they can't meet because it's like matter and antimatter type of thing. I think. Like I said, I read it once, thought it was shit, and took it back. So
there was also a storyline in one of the – I don't know whether it's JLA or the incarnation after that, where they have a crossover with the Crime Syndicate.
Mm. Right.
The same kind of stuff.
Right.
I was very disappointed with the art on this as well.
Who's the artist? Is it?
I think it's Frank Quietly.
That's what I was going to say, because I think I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. This particular story, the Justice League of America number 29 we just looked at, this has been reprinted a good number of times. It was reprinted in Justice League of America number 114 in 1974, Justice League of America Archives Volume 4 hardcover in 1998, Crisis on Multiple Earths Volume 1 trade paperback 2002,
Showcase presents Justice League of America Volume 2 Trade Paperback 2007, Justice League of America Omnibus Volume 1 Hardcover 2014, Justice League of America The Silver Age Volume 3 Trade Paperback 2017, Crisis on Infinite Earths Box Set Hardcover 2020, Justice League of America A Celebration of 60 Years Hardcover also in 2020, and Crisis on Multiple Earths Crossing Over Trade Paperback in 2021. So a good number of times this one has been reprinted. Did we want to do grades on this one? Or we pretty much all know where we fall on this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We all like to cover and, you know.
That's about it.
Yeah, that's about it.
It's diminishing returns. You know,
all that said, though, I think based on the standards that I think you've kind of set, Scott, I don't know that this is an F book.
No.
You know, because F should be the art is, you know, horrible and the story is just, you know, you can't even understand it. Right. I mean, there's nothing that bad. So, you know, this ranges somewhere from a D to a D plus, I think, other than the cover, which I'd give a solid B, honestly,
right.
The cover.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's fair. Yeah, I personally reserve F's for incomprehensible art. Like, I look at it and I just don't know what the hell is going on. This isn't that bad, but I would put this probably at a D or D minus maybe even. But yeah, definitely no higher than a D. Story for me would be harder to grade, but yeah, I wouldn't be very high on it. C at the absolute most. And yeah, I rather like the cover, but of course, I'm an easy mark for Murphy Anderson. I love me some Murphy Anderson. About the only thing I would say is a negative for me on the cover is that both Starman and Black Canary have crazy eyes. But other than that, I really like the cover.
He's goosing, huh? That's why.
He's saying, where the hell have I been for the last 18 years?
It's funny you say that because
and then I gotta go in the back.
They did have a thing. I think that eventually got revealed at some point that they did, because they have a team up later on, a two-issue team up in Brave and the Bold. And I think somebody later did a retroactive story where they had a fling during that time. I think. I could be misremembering that, but I think that actually is a thing.
Because they looked at the cover and said the same thing I did.
Probably, yeah.
I could throw a joke out there, but I won't. But I'll just say Cosmic Rod solved it.
I don't know what ratings we gave this the first time we looked at it, so we may have contradicted ourselves on that. But I still know we didn't like the book.
Right.
So,
right.
So whether we hit the same grades back then that we do now, I don't know.
Now, that first time around, did we look at both chapters or did we just look at this book?
We did both chapters.
We did. Okay. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to reading part two again because I don't remember. I mean, it's been so long.
I'm thinking we're going to take the piss out of that one, too.
Probably. Well,
and then, you know what? The in between these books and I think when we get to, like, what is it, issue 105, where they meet the what you call it, the Freedom Fighters,
right around there, yeah.
Between those two, I'm not really all that familiar with everything that occurs in the crossovers in there.
Yeah, I'm not either.
So I'm looking forward to seeing them.
Yeah, some of those I know I'll be reading for the first time, so I'm looking forward to them for if nothing else from a historical perspective. I didn't read ahead, but I've looked ahead because one of the things I was most curious to find out is when do we start to get duplication of characters? Now, we've had it as far as duplication of name, like we've had Golden Age and you know, the Silver Age Adam, Golden Age, Silver Age Flash. But I'm talking actual duplication, like Superman was the same guy on both, you know, Clark Kent, both Bruce Wayne as Batman, that sort of thing. When does that start to happen? And I honestly don't know. And I think it happens a lot later than I ever figured that it did. I kind of thought right from the get-go sort of thing. And it hasn't happened yet. And I don't think it happens for a while. And just that's remember, truly where, you know, things get really wonky when that starts to happen.
I just remember the cover, and I'm sure I've never read the issue, with the really wonky-looking Robin with the Batman costume and just very weird proportion on the body.
Yeah.
And I'm like, very curious when we get to that. I mean, I don't think it'll be all that long from now.
Right. And I think some of that stuff, at least one of those crossovers, is set right in the heart of Batman campiness because of the TV show going on. So, yeah, so that'll be interesting to see as well. But at the very least, I'm having fun with it, even though, you know, it may not be that great so far, you know, with the story and everything. But I'm still having fun with it just because I love these characters. So if that wraps us up for this time, next time, obviously, Justice League of America, number 30.
Yay.
All right. I guess that's it.
Undefeated.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiManzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.